It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We dig into the agenda of Kids Forward Now, which has this stat to consider. About one out of every seven kids in our state live in poverty, or 14% of children. It represents enough children to fill Lambeau Field more than two times. More than two times. Join in on child poverty and policy approaches. What to convey to lawmakers? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Erica Nelson is Advocacy Director for Kids Forward. Erica, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here this morning.
Yes, and Karticia Lawrence here as well, Senior Racial Equity Policy Analyst with Kids Forward. Karticia, welcome to you.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Well, Karticia, let's start here with the U.S. Census Bureau data from last year showed a surprising positive story on poverty in America. And your organization, Drill Down into Wisconsin, also found fewer people in Wisconsin living in poverty than expected during the height of the pandemic. Can you explain what happened?
Sure. So when looking into COVID data, or specifically data that came from the COVID period, we find that though we see at the national level really great reductions in poverty, in Wisconsin, the story is a little bit more complicated. So we see that poverty in Wisconsin actually increases slightly, but we also see that poverty amongst children actually sort of decreases slightly. We also see that poverty rates for people of color, Black folks, hasn't eased as much. We still see that three out of 10 Black residents in Wisconsin are living in poverty, and then about 2 in 10 Native, Latinx, and Hispanic folks, as well as Asian folks, are still living in poverty. So while we see these reductions at the national level, Wisconsin still has some more work to do.
Erica, what impact did federal relief efforts, like the rounds of stimulus checks and the expanded child relief tax credit, what did they have on families in poverty?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. The federal relief for families during COVID, which was a very stressful time for families across the country, and in particular in the state of Wisconsin, and folks of color as well, had had the impact of stabilizing and not sort of catapulting people into greater crisis, including those that were low income. So in many cases, you know, looking across the board, it sort of maintained the status quo, as opposed to making things worse. So what that tells us is that these type of investments that the federal government can make, the state government can make when it comes to the child tax credit and others, are critical to maintaining family well-being and child well-being in a myriad of different areas.
Well, here to me is like the crux of it. You know, the data tells us child poverty is falling, but can Kids Forward feel that on the ground in your work advocating for children?
That's a really interesting question. Can we feel it? I think, you know, to Karticia's point, you know, the youngest children saw some relief in terms of being in poverty, according to the data. And that's important for the future, right? Because mental health, you know, learning, all that is impacted for young kids by their environment, by their stressors, by their family stressors. And so the more that we can do for families to relieve the stress of poverty, the more we're going to see improved outcomes for children when it comes to education, when it comes to their mental health status, when it comes to social interaction. All those things are very important to develop, to get thriving young adults and thriving families.
Karticia, what's coming up for you as you think about the reality of this data bearing out in families day to day?
It really pushes me to advocate more heavily for very specific things that can help families, namely the child tax credit, which we've seen allow folks who were really struggling through the pandemic, those up to $300 payments. We've really seen the child tax credit be able to lessen the impacts of poverty. And it pushes me to really, scream from the rooftops, like, hey, we've seen what can help. And we should make the changes that we saw during the pandemic permanent.
We're talking about child poverty in Wisconsin with Karticia Lawrence and Erica Nelson. Karticia, a senior racial equity policy analyst with Kids Forward. Erica Nelson, the organization's advocacy director. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Kids Forward, Erica, says there is this sharp racial disparity that persists in, especially in childhood depression rates in Wisconsin. Can you explain what the data is showing you here?
Yeah. So, as a consequence of the pandemic, generally, the increase of children reporting to their doctor in Wisconsin increased anxiety and depression increased about 24% across the board. However, that was more amplified when looking at BIPOC children. So in 26% of Black children in the state of Wisconsin faced mental health issues, 60% of Native American children, and 22% of Latinx children were diagnosed or reported having an increased anxiety and depression in Wisconsin. And that was for the years of 2019 to 2020. So that would have spanned, the latter half of the pandemic.
Is Wisconsin making meaningful strides in reducing child health racial disparities? What do you see?
Well, I think there's a lot more work to do when it comes to reducing racial disparities across the board in Wisconsin on a number of different indicators, but in particular with when it comes to mental health. We need to continue making it a top issue. And as Karticia said, advocating and screaming from the rooftops about investing in children. That includes investing in education and mental health services within school. That's where the majority of young folks get their mental health services. There needs to be increased health coverage for kids so that they can access that. That includes expanding Medicaid and, things like going back to what Karticia had pointed out about the child tax credit and the earned income tax credit, stabilizing families financially has shown to improve, mental health and family mental health across the board. So there's a many different ways in which we can reduce these disparities by being targeted in our investments and, keeping at it.
Keeping the families whole. Yes, Erica Nelson and Karticia Lawrence are with Kids Forward. Group's mission is to ensure every Wisconsin child thrives, and this nonprofit has longevity. It's the oldest multi-issue child and family advocacy organization nationwide. Join in on child poverty, what you want lawmakers to know about improving the lives of children in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We look at the agenda of Kids Forward, the organization that works on long-term solutions to remove barriers to success for children and families. We talked about generational poverty recently with George Hinton, who leads the Social Development Commission.
I grew up in poverty, and so we know it's not an absolute process. I think education is important. Again, if we concentrate on our children, we probably will do a better job of making sure that more people are able to break the cycle of poverty.
Join in on Child Well-Being, Policies and Programs to Break the Cycle of Poverty, 800-642-1234. Cartesia Lawrence and Erica Nelson are with Kids Forward, and they stay with us. Cartesia, Kids Forward found that aid programs in the pandemic did make an impact, as you said, on families, and should be made permanent. Which policies should Wisconsin lawmakers make permanent?
It should definitely look at the way that it is administering the state level earned income tax credit. We see in some states that they have increased the amount that folks can receive back through the earned income tax credit. We've seen in other states that they have increased the age at which some kids are eligible for the earned income tax credit. So we should definitely look into expanding that. And then I think nationally, the child tax credit, as we mentioned before, has, you know, those $300 advance payments. We've seen folks be able to pay their rent. We've seen them be able to afford, you know, those daily, you know, foundational things that they're able to buy now, or were able to buy during the pandemic, that they're actually not able to buy anymore now. So definitely looking at those two refundable child tax credits and identifying how they can expand and make those permanent.
What has Kids Forward found by way of how families are doing with sky high inflation without these payments, without these advance payments? What is that impact?
Well, the impact that we're finding is that during the pandemic, when families were receiving child tax credit payments and the, you know, the advance payments that went along with the pandemic, we found that they were really able to make ends meet. They were able to stay afloat. Many moderate and low income households were doing pretty well, given what we might have expected, which was that they would not be able to afford many things during the pandemic. They were able to stay afloat. Now that those payments are not happening anymore, we see that families and individuals are now plunged back into poverty. So we're advocating that we stabilize families through refundable tax credits instead of doing other things that, you know, we see folks doing, cutting income taxes for other more wealthy groups.
We just heard from Kathleen in Mineral Point, called and couldn't stay on the line, but Kathleen notes that Wisconsin's superintendent of public instruction proposed more funding for schools to address mental health needs. And Erica, Kathleen's wondering, what are your thoughts on this type of funding?
Well, as I said before, I mean, I think that, increased investment in K through 12 education is critical to the future well-being for youth. And that would include investment in mental health services, as many children get those services while in a school setting. And investing in our public education system in the state of Wisconsin, especially given that there's deep disparities in educational outcomes for kids of color as compared to whites in the state. It's really important that we work to, increase opportunity and increase fairness for those youth of color in the schools through investment in education and giving them what they need.
I want to touch on generational poverty, and we heard George Hinton talking about it at the top. What are the effects of being able to break the cycle of poverty, and what actually does that? What does Kids Forward believe, Cartesia?
That's a great question. I think generational poverty is something that so many families are battling with. So many families have not inherited a house. Mm. They haven't inherited a car. They haven't inherited, you know, insurance money, you know, things like that. So we see that some families literally don't know what it looks like to build, you know, to really build wealth. It's a foreign concept for many families. I think one major thing that could help families who are struggling with being able to build generational wealth are programs and policies designed to increase home ownership. We know a lot of families are not interested in home ownership, but there are a lot of families who really want to be able to, you know, receive the benefits that go along with home ownership. They want to be able to pass down, you know, property to their families. We've seen that it does so much for middle and high income families when they're able to do so. So I think that would be a big thing, home ownership.
Erica, what does that look like policy wise? How could you build a program that would be able to support families in poverty to be able to one day buy a home, buy property?
Yeah, I think it's actually, you know, it's not just one program, but rather sort of a comprehensive investment in the well-being and wealth building and financial stability of families. So that means comprehensive and accessible high quality child care, access to good quality health care. That's, you know, investments in education. That is, you know, pushing for workforce policies like paid sick leave, living wage, a whole myriad of different policies that support family and child success that allows, you know, in addition to policies around sort of increasing wealth and home ownership by, you know, affordable housing, you know, all these together sort of amplify and support families to make choices about what's in their best interest and how, you know, to thrive and to how to, you know, contribute to the future of the state of Wisconsin and, you know, its economy.
We're talking about overall child wellness and how it's changed in Wisconsin. Erica Nelson there, Cartesia Lawrence with us, Erica, Advocacy Director for Kids Forward. Cartesia Lawrence is the group's Senior Racial Equity Policy Analyst. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Erica, you bring up child care, and your organization says that quality child care can reduce mental health issues as well. What do you see around early childcare and the importance of it being, you know, good quality and affordable?
Yeah, I mean, I think providing good quality, affordable childcare, one, is important for a child's social and intellectual development. As well as, you know, it allows having accessible, good childcare allows parents the freedom to have employment, right? Because without childcare, it's really hard to be employed, as many parents know, including myself and Cartesia, that, you know, and knowing and having the assurance that your child is getting what they need when they're in that child care.
Cartesia, I just want you to have the last word here. Will these declines in poverty be like a one-time blip, or do they usher in a new era where policymakers realize the level of poverty and hardship in America and make those changes?
If we're not intentional about addressing, you know, poverty in the ways that we've seen have been beneficial during the pandemic through refundable tax credits, through other programs, we might not see these declines in poverty remain. The 50-year low that we saw in poverty nationally, I would bet will not stay if we do not do something about it right now. I think we're at a crux, you know, where we can either make a huge impact or we can go back to the status quo.
Cartesia and Erica, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Cartesia Lawrence, Senior Racial Equity Policy Analyst with Kids Forward. Erica Nelson, its Advocacy Director. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We turn to Wisconsin business leaders on voting rights and democracy issues and how they connect to the broader business climate in our state and the role these companies play in supporting democratic values. Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy is a bipartisan group with a core tenet, and that is they believe it is their responsibility as leaders to support free, fair, and regular elections in which every citizen is able to exercise their right to vote. Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. David Irwin is with Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy, one of its principals. He's general partner at Hiawatha Group in private equity and venture capital. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So connect the dots, if you will. How is a functioning democracy, democratic values, beneficial for business?
It seems pretty obvious, really. But if you look at the countries in the world where the great companies have been founded and grown to the positions that they are in, these are democratic nations with rule of law, the United States of America being first and foremost among all of those. And the reason is really very simple, that liberal democracies allow for human flourishing, the pursuit of knowledge and science and better answers to the problems that people and companies have, and stability through, through popular sovereignty and the peaceful transition of power from one administration to the next gives businesses the certainty and the stability that they need in order to plan for the future and make investments and hire people and all of the things that make companies successful.
But from a corporate standpoint, what does standing up for democracy look like? What are some examples there?
Well, some of the things that our group is doing, and I should stress at the beginning here that we're a bipartisan or nonpartisan group of business leaders that have, added a few more organically as we've gone along over the last few months. And the first thing that we're trying to do is help employers be an organ and an instrument in our society for enabling and encouraging people to take part in the democratic process. So one tangible thing that we've done along those lines is create a digital employee toolkit for employers to use that, that the employer can use through their intranet or other means of employee communications to help everybody understand when the elections are, how they can get informed about the issues and the candidates running for office, what kinds of things are required in order to get registered to vote, and then just the mechanics of showing up at the right place at the right time to play their part in democracy on election days.
Your organization, it says it is the responsibility of business leaders to support free, fair, and regular elections. What should change in how elections are being run in Wisconsin?
We believe that there are some sort of endeavors underfoot that threaten the way that elections are run in Wisconsin. In fact, we have candidates around our state and in other parts of the country who have as one of the key parts of their platform something called election integrity. To run on something called election integrity is telling citizens and voters that that somehow we lack election integrity in our country and in our state. And that is simply not true. So our group really advocates for the preservation of the systems and processes that have been built up over 2.5 centuries in our country to run elections on a fair and rigorous and well-conducted basis. So we actually, I guess to answer your question a little bit more directly, we really stand in opposition to some of the efforts like, candidate Michaels and some other candidates expressed interest in kind of disestablishing the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which we believe was a good idea when it was established and should be preserved.
How you've mentioned you've picked up some more businesses along the way here in the last few months. How widespread are these sentiments about democratic values? How widespread are they among the business community in our state? What do you hear?
I hear a lot of concerns, especially, from people like me who have historically been, to the center and on the right in terms of our political spectrum, people who are involved in business, people who generally side with candidates that, believe in less taxation, less regulation, a more open and free economy. What I hear from those kinds of people on this particular issue is a fair amount of concern about, frankly, the craziness that we've seen in this.
And David Irwin, you're breaking up here. your connection is just a bit unstable. Can you just repeat what you said there of what you've seen?
What I've seen among business leaders, including business leaders who are on the conservative or Republican side of the spectrum, is actually quite a bit of concern about the craziness that we've seen in our system since, the days leading up to and including January 6, 2021, when thousands of people were motivated by untruths about the lack of integrity in an election and about fraud that didn't exist. To attack our Capitol, for state legislatures to send fake electors, including our own state. These do not provide for a peaceful transition of power, which is a key part of the stability that businesses need in order to function and grow.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment as we talk about state business executives supporting democratic values. David Irwin is here, a tech industry executive, a principal at Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. David, your group ran this six-figure digital ad in the state that supports Democratic Governor Tony Evers' reelection campaign and really slams Republican candidate Tim Michaels for declining to promise he'll accept election results. Here's part of the ad.
I have never voted for a Democratic governor before, and this will be the first time.
This will be the first time that I have voted for a Democrat for governor.
This November, I'm voting for Governor Evers.
I'm voting for Governor Evers.
Because I'm voting for our democracy,
for our economy, and our country.
Why run the ad?
We run the ad because we believe that these principles of democracy should be a very key issue in this current campaign. There are a lot of things that business leaders and Americans are concerned about, ranging from the economy to education, healthcare, and a number of social issues. But unless we remain true to the bedrock values of democracy in our state and our country, we're not going to be able to make decisions on those other issues in a proper democratic manner. So we're trying to elevate the importance of the respect for democracy and democratic process in our elections and absolutely highlight the difference in the way that different candidates view that issue.
Let's take a call now. Martha joining us from Menominee. Martha, what would you like to bring up?
Yeah, I'd like your guest David's take on making Election Day a holiday. If he's, you know, working with business owners, maybe this is the right group to start putting pressure on employers, you know, private businesses, to give their employees the day off. Let's make it a holiday and get everybody voting.
Martha, thank you. David, your thoughts there?
Hi, Martha. Thank you very much. Our group hasn't taken like a policy position on making Election Day a holiday. For employers who have the wherewithal to do so, we think that providing paid time off on Election Day is a great thing to do. Employers are required to allow time off by law, not paid time off, but employers are required to allow their people some time to go vote on Election Day. We haven't taken a group position on making Election Day a holiday or doing anything about paid time off, in terms of the law.
Let me ask you this, in the nonpartisan or bipartisan nature of this group, David Irwin, what has taken you by surprise as you meet with this group?
What's taken me by surprise is that, I think we all have a tendency to get a little bit very heavily focused on the immediate issues of the day. And for so many of us in business and elsewhere, those issues have to do with the supply chain, with inflation, with the economy, with the ability to get enough workers for our businesses, all those kinds of things. And I'm concerned, and our group is concerned, that we're forgetting just how close this country came to a really disastrous situation on the 6th of January, 2021. And that was all motivated by manufactured claims of fraud in that last election. And those lies inspired state legislatures to send fake electors, and they inspired thousands of people to attack our Capitol. This is the way that democracies die. And if we fail to be a functioning democracy, we will not have the proper means to make the right decisions and laws about the economy and education and healthcare and all those other things that are important to us all.
David Irwin on the steering committee of the group Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy, as we explore how Wisconsin companies stand up for voting rights, democratic values, what it means for the business climate in our state. Join in 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new report called the American Democracy Scorecard finds massive corporations get poor marks on how they respond to a wide range of voting rights and democracy issues. Milwaukee-headquartered Northwestern Mutual is one of the 100 companies on the scorecard, which got an F. Over 60% of the companies assessed in the report got a failing letter grade. Join in on corporate responsibility and democracy, 800-642-1234. David Irwin is here with the group Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy. Stays with us. David, I want to ask you about those findings from the watchdog group Accountable, which is tracked over $25 million as of August from Fortune 500 companies to members of Congress who voted against certifying the 2020 election results following the insurrection. What do you make of those corporate donations?
Well, I don't know anything about the organization that gave these grades that you're alluding to here. We obviously did have, I believe, more than 100 Congress people who voted against the certification of the vote. And, I think our group would say that any corporation, as part of its overall business interests, needs to certainly take into account anti-democratic behavior of Congress people, such as, you know, voting against the certification of the vote last year. But it's not my position or our group's position to, you know, express an opinion on how well a particular company is doing with this or that.
Let's go to John now in Milwaukee. John, go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I very much appreciate the speaker's group and their emphasis on democracy and on their focus on elections, which is very appropriate today, of course, an election coming up. I'd like to just ask a question related to it, and that is regarding gerrymandering. I'm very concerned that the state of Wisconsin today is really not a democracy. People's votes are not equal. I've done the math, and based on the gerrymandered situation where Republicans will always have about a two-thirds majority in the state legislature, I feel my vote as a Democrat counts 0.6, whereas Republican votes in the state count 1.4, actually. And it's you know, that's another challenge perhaps for his group to think about in the future following the elections. It's if you take that and other issues of the legislature not appointing governor's appointments to positions trying to stripping powers from the governor, I don't feel as though I'm living in a democracy today in Wisconsin, and I know it's going to affect this state and its business community and everybody if this continues in this direction.
John, thank you. David, what do you hear there, and how does your group address redistricting?
Thank you. Thank you, John. I think you're absolutely right that partisan gerrymandering is one of the ways in which democracy dies. Traditionally, I've always been a Republican, so it sort of benefits me in that sense that our state has been gerrymandered in a manner that always benefits that party. But there are other states that have been, Illinois, for example, that have been heavily gerrymandered for the other party. In either case, it's bad for democracy. And it is literally part of how democracies die. This is making some people's votes count more than others, setting ourselves up in, frankly, just a less competitive environment. Anyone who believes in free markets, as I do, believes that, you know, free markets and industry, business, and politics should exist everywhere. You're eliminating a free market when you gerrymander your state into highly uncompetitive districts. The gerrymandered state legislature is one of the reasons why we believe that Tim Michaels would not be an appropriate choice for governor, because with a Republican governor in the state house aligned with a heavily partisan and gerrymandered legislature, we set ourselves up for future elections where a governor could be very pressured by a legislature to refuse to certify the will of the people in one of our elections. That is an extremely ominous prospect. So thanks a lot for your input there. And I think as time goes on, we will give more thought to the issue you raised.
David Irwin here, principal at Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Philothea in Viroqua is here. Philothea, go ahead.
Yes, I really agree with the guest who just called in. And I'm really concerned about gerrymandering. It almost makes you want to feel like your vote is just not going to count in Wisconsin. But I wanted to really urge people to pay attention to the qualifications of each candidate and try to vote on their qualifications to be our legislators and governors, and not just vote along party lines this time particularly, because I see a lot of candidates across the country really actually totally inexperienced and not at all qualified to work on the issues that really face our country. And instead, people are just, you know, going along who supported Trump, who believes election was a fraud, this kind of thing. I think we really need to look at the qualifications of the candidates apart from their party. So thanks for taking my call.
Yes, thank you. David Irwin, what about qualifications as your business group sees it when looking at candidates?
Thank you. We really haven't gotten into the business of assessing a candidate's policies on healthcare, education, et cetera, or how qualified they are for a role. Those differences absolutely exist, but it hasn't been an area of focus for us. I guess we've kind of taken the position that you as a voter, however you feel about a candidate's qualifications and about their policy positions, you should be very heavily influenced by their attitude toward democracy, the rule of law, and the upholding of our democratic norms through open and fair elections and proper counting and certification of our votes.
Let's go to Claudia in Menasha. Claudia, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to say I had lived in Bangladesh in 1975 when they had a military coup that came in and shot the president and many family members. And I remember thinking how grateful I was that I lived in a country that had a peaceful transition of power. But, of course, now I'm more concerned.
Claudia, thank you. What do you make of her concern as the group looks at peaceful transitions of power and democratic values, David Irwin?
I think you should be concerned. 2 years ago, we had the least peaceful transition of power that's ever occurred in our country. We are setting ourselves up for a repeat of that and something potentially worse. It all starts with the false casting of aspersions on the integrity of the elections that we have. And it continues through, frankly, lying about that to voters, manipulating their patriotism into believing that they have been robbed in an election. It is not true. Anyone running on the platform of election integrity is telling you that election integrity does not exist. And that is a lie. It's a lie that got us January 6th, and it can do so again.
David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you all.
David Irwin is a principal of Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy, general partner at Hiawatha Group. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.